you know, 10 years from now, we're going to be looking back and some people are going to go, yeah, why did I oppose that 10 years ago? What was I thinking? You know, very similar to marriage equality, very similar to abortion rights.
Welcome to the Humanist Hour, the official broadcast of the American Humanist Association. In this episode, Maggie Ardiente talks to us about what you can expect from this year's anniversary conference, tells us how to hobnob with celebrities at the conference, and gets downright political with us. This year is a special one for the American Humanist Association. It marks 75 years since our founding. To celebrate, our annual conference returns to AHA's original home of Chicago this May 26th through the 29th, with lots to do for everyone. In addition to being AHA's Director of Development and Communications, Maggie Ardiente also organizes AHA's annual conference. She took time this week out of her busy schedule to talk to us about the history of the conference, what attendees can expect, how to make the most of your conference experience, and the kinds of political considerations that go into creating a conference like this. Welcome, Maggie Ardiente, Director of Development and Communication for American Humanists. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Now, you have been working on the conferences for AHA for several years now at this point. Is that correct?
That's correct. I started working at the American Humanist Association in 2005, but I wasn't conference coordinator, I think, until about maybe 2009 or so. Before me, Fred Edwards used to run the conference, and for the years during that period of time, we would quite often work together to put the conference on together. But I have a great team here at AHA. A lot of staffers help out in various parts of the conference, so it's really a team effort.
This is celebrating 75 years of humanism, this year's conference. How many of those years has AHA been putting on conferences?
We've put on conferences since, I think the first year was maybe 1950 or so. And I think that even before then, even when it was formed in 1941, there were still smaller meetings going on. But yeah, we're celebrating 75 years of the founding of the American Humanist Association. And we always hold our conferences in various parts of the country, quite often working with a local chapter of ours, who is very enthusiastic about being the host chapter for our annual conferences. So we're really excited about this year's to just celebrate how long the AHA has been here in the United States and the work we've done over the past 75 years to promote humanism in the United States.
And quickly, so people who are listening to this and are excited about the conference know what they need to do. When and where is this year's conference, and how can people find more information about it and register?
Well, the conference this year will be held in Chicago, which is where the American Humanist Association was founded back in 1941. The dates are May 26th through the 29th, and you can find out more at conference.americanhumanist.org. We actually had to expand our hotel room block. We're staying at the Hyatt Regency McCormick Place in downtown Chicago, so there are still rooms available, but I strongly encourage people to book because we extended it to a certain block, and I can see that filling up very quickly as well, and then after that, people won't be able to stay at the hotel for the rate of $129 per night, which is pretty good, I think, for downtown Chicago. So I strongly encourage, if you're interested, at the very least, book your hotel room first, and then you can always register online at conference.americanhumanist.org.
So this year, with the Reason Rally, we're seeing organized atheism for the first time really have the kind of celebrity pull that I think it's been trying for a good long time now. American humanists have always had some very impressive guests at their conferences. Can you tell me a little bit about the kinds of people who have spoken at these conferences?
Well, I think quite often a lot of the speakers and awardees that come to our conference quite often have heard of humanism before. And often we get these wonderful letters back from them after we've invited them to become a speaker or an awardee saying, you know, I'm honored to be associated with this organization that's been around for so many decades, that has really tried to push progressive agendas, humanist agendas to the forefront in the United States. I think my favorite speaker, as long as I've been working at AHA, was Bill Nye the Science Guy, because I grew up watching Bill Nye the Science Guy. He was an amazing, engaging speaker, talked about the importance of climate change, which he had received the award in 2010. And even then, you know, people were still not sure about it. They weren't sure if the evidence was out there. And he was really one of the first to talk about how important it was to recognize what was happening to our planet. And afterwards, it was great. He, you know, he could have just gone to his room or went home, but he instead stayed after at the conference, hung out with us. We were at the bar having drinks, and he was just talking to anybody who would come up and speak to him. And it was just so great. He was just so friendly and nice, and he was somebody who really appreciated being associated with the American Humanist Association, because we had had other scientists like Carl Sagan, like Neil deGrasse Tyson, and other prominent people who had been associated and received awards from the AHA. So we have a long list, you know, Joyce Carol Oates, Gloria Steinem, Kurt Vonnegut, Isaac Asimov. I mean, so many intellectuals, writers, authors, speakers, activists, and people who are really respected in our society have been associated with AHA for a long time. And so it's just been great to have these people come to our conference, say some great things in support of humanism. And it's a great opportunity to meet these people one-on-one. I think a lot of times at some events, it's very difficult to get to know speakers and talk to them and hang out with them. And quite often our speakers are so willing to really talk to our attendees. So I strongly encourage, if there are people that you've wanted to meet that are coming to our Chicago conference, it's a great opportunity to meet them in person and get to talk to them.
Now, the names that you mentioned, Isaac Asimov was known for being a humanist, but many of the others are not, and maybe even don't specifically identify as humanists, but they are mostly people that American Humanist Association has chosen to give awards to, and this is why they're at the conference. Can you tell me a little bit about what AHA looks for when they're going to give these awards?
Well, certainly it's somebody that embodies humanist values. So we look at what they've said publicly related to religion or non-religion, what they've said about progressive issues, obviously their own personal record in their own careers, whether it's writing or science or any activism, that sort of thing. And we see if that person really embodies what the American Humanist Association stands for. Another criteria is celebrity, is somebody who has a far reach, because one of the things that we want to do, a lot of times, you know, people and other organizations don't see humanism as something that's really important, because obviously they've either never heard of it, or there's somebody that is not a humanist, or somebody who is religious. But when they see prominent people that they know associated with humanism, they think, oh, okay, this is something that I should probably pay attention to and learn more about. So it is important that somebody of a pretty high caliber, whether it's in their career or just, you know, in the general public, it's really important for us to identify someone. And of course, that person can have an even bigger network of people that can connect us with other potential humanists or other people that have great influence. So I think that's another piece of identifying people who could potentially be awardees. And of course, finally, we look at diversity. I think it's very important for us to not always be giving awards to, you know, if I can say, older white men, which traditionally the AHA has done over the past years. I think that in recent years, we've really tried to make an effort to diversify the people who are receiving awards from us and being part of the American Humanist Association, and that's very important to us.
So tell me a little bit about this year's award winners.
Well, this year, our Humanist of the Year is Jared Diamond, who is a best-selling author of particularly Guns, Germs, and Steel. He was a name that was quite often recommended by a majority of our members. They were telling us, you know, you have to read Collapse, you've got to read Guns, Germs, and Steel, and he is absolutely 100% a humanist. So we're very excited to have him as our Humanist of the Year. We have Medea Benjamin, who is the co-founder of Code Pink. a feminist anti-war organization. We've had the Humanist Heroine Award introduced by the Feminist Caucus, which is an adjunct organization of the American Humanist Association, now becoming the Feminist Humanist Alliance. And so we're very excited to have Benjamin there to be able to speak about anti-war issues, because I think that's a very important issue for a lot of humanists. Particularly now, I feel like there's a lot of opportunities to talk more there. Another exciting speaker is John Delancey, who was Q on Star Trek. And I know that I personally have to catch up on my Star Trek to get to know him. But again, you know, because so many of our attendees are big Star Trek fans, I know they're very excited to have him come. Ernie Chambers, who is the Nebraska State Senator, a humanist through and through, very much a progressive, and somebody who's done a lot of great work in Nebraska at the state level. We have Jerry Coyne, who is going to be our keynote speaker, who is an evolutionary professor at the University of Chicago. He's going to be speaking at the very last session of our conference on Sunday. And we also have Elizabeth Loftus, who is our Isaac Asimov Science Award winner, a memory scientist who's been published in a lot of different science publications and has been a speaker at a lot of secular organizations as well. So we're really excited about our lineup. I think they're going to definitely put on some really great speeches. And like I mentioned before, a lot of them quite often love to talk one-on-one with the awardees that are there. So I really encourage people to attend.
And when you're talking about talking one-on-one with attendees, how big is the conference typically?
Our conference is typically between 400 and 500, and we're estimated to get over 500 at the AHA conference in Chicago this year. It's just great because afterwards, you know, most of our speakers are available to sign books and people are always asking them questions and getting the opportunity to talk to them. We also have Q&A sessions during all of our speaking sessions. So if people have a question or they want to, you know, get clarification on something somebody said, we actually encourage that process. It's very important for us to get feedback from our attendees and be able to talk with our speakers.
So there are opportunities for somebody who might feel a little bit shy about introducing themselves to a celebrity.
Absolutely. And I can help with that. I quite often have done that for some people. And I'm thrilled to do that because I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of people have come to our conference solely for some of our speakers. And that's always great. That tells us that we're really attracting new people, attracting people that may have never heard about the American Humanist Association before, but they see somebody like, for example, last year, Lawrence Krauss, who came to our conference. We had 20 students from, I think it was the University of Central Florida, that drove up to Denver just to attend and see Lawrence Krauss speak. So, you know, when we associate ourselves with quite prominent speakers, I think we can attract a lot of people. And so it's a good opportunity to be able to see them in person and be able to ask questions and talk to them.
You're listening to The Humanist Hour. I'm Stephanie Zavan, and I'm speaking with American Humanist's own Maggie Ardiente about this year's anniversary conference in Chicago. One of the things that AHA has done in the last year is decide to really focus on social justice. And this is certainly something that AHA has touched on before this past year, but not only is it official, but it's become quite obvious in your materials, in the kinds of things that end up in the Humanist magazine and on the website, and just generally otherwise in AHA's priorities. How is that affecting this year's conference?
I want to think about a little bit, you know, going back from last year in particular. In 2015, when we had our annual conference in Denver, I remember when the things that were going on with Trayvon Martin and Eric Garner and what was happening in Ferguson was happening. You know, we had posted a lot of things on our social media, being very clear that we were in support of the Black Lives Matter movement. But we got a lot of negative feedback from that. That happens. We understand that with social media, when you put some things out there, people are going to be reacting very strongly against that. And we were very disappointed, though, because we thought these were people who identified as humanists, and they were saying things like all lives matter, and they were saying things like, you know, black on black crime, and we should support the cops, all these terrible, you know, mythical things that were certainly things that we did not stand for. But it was a concern of ours because we thought, again, you know, these are people who are identifying as humanists. So we wanted to be very clear about where we stood. So for the first time, we really wanted to address racial issues. And we did that in 2015 with a panel that I put together, which was called Humanism and Race. And it was led by Dr. Anthony Pinn, whom many listeners, I'm sure, know is a scholar on African-American humanism. We had Dr. Monica Miller, also a scholar, Sikivu Hutchinson, who talked about the importance of recognizing race and addressing the issues that are affecting the Black community. But even then, and I think that a lot of people at that conference were very supportive of the session and being able to talk and have questions, you know, there were still one or two that didn't understand why humanism was getting involved in something like this. And that really bothers me because humanism has to get involved whenever there are oppressed groups. Whenever there's oppression in society, humanism must be involved and we must take a stand. And so social justice is something that we absolutely have to be doing, and that we realized soon after that session that we need to make this a lot more visible. As you said, you know, we have done a little thing, you know, little things here and there, you know, signed on to some legislative issues, made some statements on social media, wrote some articles in the Humanist magazine, but we really wanted to make this a serious priority, which is why we hired Sincere Carabo to be our social justice coordinator while we're forming the Black Humanist Alliance, the LGBT Humanist Alliance, the Feminist Humanist Alliance, and possibly more types of subgroups to be part of the American Humanist Association. And this year we are going to be having a social justice panel that's going to be led by Sincere. We're going to have James Croft participating, trying to remember, you know, Randall Jensen, to talk about, you know, LGBT issues, you know, Black Lives Matter issues, feminist issues, all kinds of things that I think are going to be really important in sort of crafting our social justice agenda for the coming year. So I think if people want to learn more about that, we're definitely going to have that at our conference, and I encourage you to participate. And, you know, certainly for people who again, think that this is something that humanism shouldn't be involved in, I strongly disagree with that, but I encourage you to attend this session, learn, listen, find out more, and really be a part of it. So, and I hope that people who see that will eventually come around.
Well, and you've mentioned that you want people to participate in these sessions, particularly with questions. So I know a lot of people feel intimidated, and particularly in certain venues, about asking questions when they don't understand something about social justice. It sounds like this might be a good place to bring some of those questions.
Absolutely. And like I've mentioned before, a lot of our speakers, they'll be there throughout the conference. So if you don't want to ask a question publicly during the main forum, wait afterwards or ask before. Our speakers are always available to answer questions one-on-one. You know, and certainly we'll have their emails available as well. So if you go home and you're thinking about it a little bit more and you have further questions, I know they'll be available to speak. I mean, our speakers are here to be able to talk to people, to get what they want to say out there. But understand that, you know, not everybody's always going to be convinced by everything that they say. Or these are people who are completely brand new to issues and really need some time to process and understand them. But our speakers are always available to answer questions from people.
So while we're talking about social justice, it has certainly been an issue in the secular community, particularly the organized secular community broadly. Is this something that affects who the AHA is not willing to invite as a speaker?
Well, I think we take a lot of advice from people regarding speakers. And that is true. You know, we've had some controversial speakers in the past. We've had some people where a lot of humanists would completely disagree with. We've had awardees, I'll say that, where they've done maybe one thing that was maybe something that humanists wouldn't agree with. You know, nothing really bad, but just something that, you know, we wouldn't agree with. And that's okay. You know, nobody can be 100% perfect all times. I don't want to, you know, say we're going to revoke your humanist card just because there's one thing that we disagree on. And quite often humanists do disagree on a number of issues. But I do think that it's important for us to make sure that we are having people who represent AHA as best as we possibly can, because we don't want to have speakers come to our conference, say things that completely contradict what we stand for, and then we'd worry that people would listen to the speaker or see this person representing AHA and go, wow, well, if this is what AHA is all about, then I don't know if I really want to associate with them. So it is important for us to vet our speakers as best as we possibly can. And we take feedback from people. You know, we really make sure we examine things. If we have to do some research, further research on it, we do it. And, you know, we always just try to strive to be better, ensuring that we have a diverse group of speakers, but also people who represent humanism in the best possible light.
2016, obviously, is an election year and a pretty, let's say, stark choice this year in terms of presidential elections. Has that played into at all the kinds of issues that AHA wanted to cover in this conference?
I think the election is certainly on everybody's mind. That's what we're talking about in the news mostly. That's what everybody is thinking about. And I do think that a lot of the issues that have been presented will be addressed. You know, we talked about corporate personhood last year. We talked about overpopulation. Planned Parenthood was a particularly important topic of last year because that was what was in the news. Now, the American Humanist Association, of course, doesn't endorse candidates in particular, but I think that it's something that we can't deny. And I think by the time perhaps the May conference rolls around, we may have a more solid idea of who will be the Democratic ticket and who will be on the Republican ticket. And I think that's going to shape certainly the discussions that will be taking place during the Q&As, during the opportunities to speak to our awardees and our speakers. So I think there's definitely going to be an influence as to whether or not certainly the elections are going to have an effect on the future of humanism and the work of the American Humanist Association starting next year.
Do you ever find it difficult as an organization to walk that line between being humanist advocates, which there's nothing about politics that doesn't touch on humanism and vice versa, and being a not specifically political organization?
It's incredibly difficult. And we've been wanting so much to say so many things about what's being said during many of the presidential debates, during even some of the local campaigns, the congressional races that have been happening across the country. And it's not that we don't, you know, we certainly do take political positions, I believe, when we really come down to it. I think that our executive director, Roy Speckhart, would argue that humanism is inherently political. We can't not be motivated to take action on the progressive issues that we stand for. And we're, you know, I think compared to a lot of the other secular organizations that are out there, we do take positions on a number of progressive issues, and we call ourselves progressive. We are a progressive organization. But that being said, yes, there's a fine line between being sort of overt about candidates that stand, you know, certainly support those progressive issues or don't support those progressive issues, and not being able to say, okay, we support this candidate over this candidate, which we, of course, can't say and don't do. But I think that a lot of humanists may have a tendency towards something. And I think that anybody could look at what we stand for and maybe make that assumption very clearly. And that's why we have the opportunity, you know, certainly with the magazine, the Humanist Magazine and thehumanist.com, to be able to talk about a lot of these political issues sort of from a reporting standpoint and talk to other humanists and hear what they have to say about political issues rather than taking a political stance as an organization. So what matters to us is that people are just having conversations. They're discussing the issues. They're saying, my humanism is important and it motivates my position on this issue. I think that's important. We should have those conversations. So I think it's definitely, you know, from now until the election, it's just going to be very interesting.
And I know that there are other secular organizations that have, in a lot of ways, explicitly shied away from, they've actually made statements about this, taking stances on political issues or becoming what they would consider to be political organizations because they feel like they wouldn't be able to represent the full group of people that they're trying to represent. But I want to come back to something you said earlier. this year's conference in Chicago, where you're looking at having a panel specifically on social justice, where you are announcing and launching a bunch of these various alliances that are thoroughly political. This is going to be one of your largest conferences in years?
That's right. And I really appreciate what you said about, you know, some more organizations that won't be that don't take a stance on political issues. And I think that's fine, obviously. I respect organizations that have to make that call. And I think that even for us, we still are debating certain types of issues. You know, for example, the issue on immigration. You know, the AHA hasn't taken a position on immigration just yet. And it's something that we're still discussing. We're still deciding, you know, there are draft resolutions that have been presented to us. And we're still exploring those types of issues as to whether or not we're going to take a stand on that. But I think I'm very proud to be associated with the American Humanist Association, because we will take stands even though we know sometimes a number of people might disagree, because it's important for us to be present in these political issues. I mean, these issues affect our daily lives, and we want to be there when it happens. You know, the AHA was supportive of marriage equality, I think before even Harvey Milk was starting his activism in California. You know, we were in support of elective abortion rights, I think even before Planned Parenthood was making that a priority in their work. You know, we have always been at the cutting edge of a lot of these social issues, you know, talking about them and taking resolutions on these issues, even before, you know, the organizations that are known for them now were taking them as part of what they do. You know, and I say that because I think it's important to realize that we need to be examining these issues right away and saying that we support them if that's what we do. You know, we're not going to just jump on the bandwagon just because everybody else is doing it. We're doing it because this is inherent to humanism. This is about the core of equal rights. It motivates our ability to create a better world. And so we're going to take those stands right away. And we're going to do what we can to help these movements to again, stop the oppression of certain types of groups. So even though, you know, you may not agree 100% with every resolution that we've put out or every stance that AHA has put out, that doesn't mean that you can't be a member. That doesn't mean that you can't still support the core issues that we promote. I think, if anything, I think it lends a bit of respect that AHA is willing to go out there, willing to go out on a limb and make a stand and make a case for important issues, even though we know maybe some people might be turned off by it. Like with the Black Lives Matters movement, I think a lot of humanists were very concerned that we were getting involved in racial justice. And you know, I'm really here to say it's an important issue for us, so we're going to do something about it.
Briefly, aside from hearing from people who are upset about that, do you feel like that's had any negative effect on the organization?
Not at all. I think, if anything, it's brought a lot of people who have been supportive of this issue for a long time to say, I am so glad AHA is finally taking a public stance on this. I'm going to join. I'm going to support the AHA. So the positive response has been far better than the negative response. And you know, I think that when there's negative response, we understand that, we listen, we certainly just don't mean to just write off people completely. You know, like I say, even if you disagree with one position that we may have, that doesn't mean that you can't call yourself a humanist, and that doesn't mean that you can't support the other issues that we do support. But I will say that I encourage people, again, to really look at the issue, because I think down the road, you know, 10 years from now, we're going to be looking back and some people are going to go, yeah, why did I oppose that 10 years ago? What was I thinking? You know, very similar to marriage equality, very similar to abortion rights. I just think that history is going to show that we were on the right side.
So you mentioned that people could get training in various parts of getting involved in humanism. Would you care to expand on that a little bit?
Well, our Celebrant program is put on by the Humanist Society, which is our adjunct organization that certifies officiants to conduct secular, humanist, non-religious weddings, funerals, baby naming ceremonies, other life ceremonies. There's a really strong demand out there for non-religious ceremonies. I think we can see that because there's an increasing number of religiously unaffiliated people. And what's great about humanists celebrants is that, again, we can do non-religious ceremonies, but they're also experts in conducting ceremonies. I think quite often, sometimes people, you know, get their friend to become a Universal Life Church officiant really quick for a day, and then they have them conduct the wedding. And that's great. You know, I think a lot of people can enjoy that. But sometimes people are looking for somebody who's a little more skilled in conducting weddings, people who have had the experience for years to do this. And so we do trainings, and, you know, we let people know how to become a humanist celebrant. There's a process by which somebody can be certified. It's an interview process. It's, you know, making sure that you're a member, you understand what humanism is all about. It's also a good opportunity to network with other celebrants. I think there's, you know, we have celebrants all across the country. I think we have over 330 now, which is probably the highest we've ever seen because there's such a great demand. And just for people who, you know, if you've never, you're not a celebrant yet, but you're interested in it, it might be something that you want to do down the road. I encourage you to attend this workshop so you can learn a little bit more about the process and also get some feedback from other celebrants who can tell you what it's all about. We also do have activist sessions for chapter leaders. We have about 187 chapters across the country, people who are leading local communities, local humanist groups. There's opportunities to network there, to get to know your fellow presidents and vice presidents of smaller groups. I think one of the big things that they'll be talking about this year is really how to form community, how to really build a local group that does more than just the lecture style sessions and lecture style events that most of our local groups have done in the past. They're talking about now, you know, getting involved in social justice issues in their community, getting involved in local lobbying, you know, getting involved in charitable efforts. You know, these are all things that are going to be discussed during the Sunday afternoon sessions that we'll be conducting post-conference. So I encourage people, whether you're interested in becoming part of local leadership at the community level, or if you're interested in becoming a humanist celebrant, those are workshops that I encourage people to attend.
You're listening to the Humanist Hour. I'm Stephanie Zavan, and I'm speaking with American Humanist's own Maggie Ardiente about this year's anniversary conference in Chicago. When people come up, what else are you offering them? What other kinds of things will they learn through the weekend, opportunities to interact with other humanists, that sort of thing?
Well, our conference is lecture-based, and we have a variety of topics that we're going to be addressing at the AHA. What we do at the conference is really address some of the more pressing issues that have happened over the past year, issues that we think will be coming up soon. Obviously, LGBT issues, social justice issues, climate change, neuroscience, other types of topics of which we try to find experts in and speak about, you know, for an hour or so. And I think that if there's something, you know, if you don't know much about humanism, we take a position on almost everything. We take positions on almost everything under the sun. And I think that if you want to learn more about humanism beyond simply good without a God, which is our motto and certainly the primary thing that we do here at AHA, the conference is a good way to see where we stand on other types of issues. To also really engage, I think a lot of humanists and atheists and non-believers are still, if they're not already, especially in the beginning parts of their formulation of thinking, really have a lot of questions. They want to see what humanism stands for, what atheists stand for. You know, and certainly they have all kinds of issues that are important to them, quite often progressive issues. And so we want to try to address that at our conference. We want to be engaging. We want to be at the cutting edge of issues and being able to talk about issues. And our conference is a good place to do that. So we have a lot of lectures going on throughout the day, opportunities to ask questions about what's being said. We have receptions that are going on so that you can talk to people one-on-one, you can network, you can get to know people. We have workshops for chapter leaders, for people who are interested in becoming humanist celebrants, you know, to conduct non-religious or secular weddings, funerals, other life ceremonies. And certainly there's opportunities to talk to our board of directors, who will be holding their board meeting at that conference and will be in Chicago throughout the conference. So you can make your voice heard if you're a member of the American Humanist Association and want to see the AHA doing certain things in areas that you care about. So the conference is a really great opportunity, both as a speaker and as a new person, to really get involved in humanism.
You mentioned the alliances that you're setting up. Is this something that people will have an opportunity to learn more about at the conferences, or is this new enough that you're not quite ready to launch them there yet?
Actually, we should be launching them formally very soon. I think by the time the conference rolls around, we'll be able to announce the people who are going to be our co-leaders of those groups. Already right now, we do have on the schedule a Feminist Humanist Alliance business meeting that's happening on Thursday before the main conference starts. And we might be adding more of those sort of organizing sessions or networking opportunities before the conference actually starts in May. So I encourage people to check the schedule on the website, conference.americanhumanist.org. And if you're somebody who wants to get involved, please, you know, send us an email. Let us know that you're somebody who wants to get involved in these alliances and really help make them grow.
Since this is the first time that our listeners are going to be hearing about these alliances, can you let people know what the alliances look like more generally? How are these structured? What are they supposed to do?
Well, they're going to be structured mostly volunteer. We're going to have one or two leaders heading the organization and hoping to gather a lot of people who are interested in getting involved. And it's going to be very similar to, you know, before we've had these alliances, we had the Feminist Caucus and we also had the LGBT Humanist Council. But I think we're going to be following a very similar model in the sense that we want these to be a lot more substantive. You know, it's not merely just gathering a bunch of, you know, LGBT people and being able to network, or the same thing with feminists, just getting a bunch of feminists together and networking. We really want to be able to take action. We want to be a visible presence at national feminist LGBT conferences. We want to be a national presence on the legislative side. Again, if there are legislative issues that we can sign on to or lobby our local or national leaders on, it'll be led by these subgroups, these sub-alliance groups, especially if it's an LGBT issue, if it's a feminist issue, if it's a Black Lives Matter issue or a racial justice issue. So those are the types of things that we want the alliances to be doing. And certainly, again, as I mentioned before, we want to have a presence at other conferences, not just secular ones, which we definitely want to see, because we want to see our fellow secular organizations being involved in these issues as well, but also, you know, national LGBT conferences and feminist conferences like NOW, you know, National Organization for Women and others, because we want to show that humanists are involved in these progressive issues. Again, we've done this, you know, a little more quietly, you know, little things here and there, signing on to things, being a part of things, speaking at conferences, but we want to make this far more visible to really let people know that this is an issue that is very important to us as humanists. So I think you'll see a lot of activity coming out in the next year. I'm really excited to see what Sincere will be producing over the next year.
Because it has been a question, I assume the T in LGBT for trans issues and people and organizations should be well represented within humanists?
I completely agree. And I think it's an issue of which we are being even more vocal about. These religious freedom, quote-unquote, bills that are happening across the country are just horrific. And it's interesting because I think that we predicted that a little bit. I think the secular movement was always aware that religion would be eventually used as a weapon to discriminate against people, certainly the LGBT community first and foremost, but I think also eventually the atheist community in a more direct way. So it's incredibly offensive that there's actually support for discrimination against such a large number of people. And I think that we'll be seeing that more represented in our literature and conferences because it's such an important topic, and it's something that we certainly want to be on the right side of and fighting against.
We've talked a lot about the work that people have an opportunity to do at the conference. what kinds of things do people get to do to kind of kick back and get to know each other? I believe there's a post-conference event on Sunday afternoon as well.
That's right. Our post-conference tour of Chicago. You know, quite often people are coming to our conferences and they say, well, I want to fit in some sightseeing. I've never been to Chicago before. So I encourage people to sign up for that. And it's not going to be a huge group. You know, I think we're estimated maybe about 80 people or so who are going to be participating in our post-conference tour of Chicago, where they're going to be visiting the Museum of Science and Industry and the John Hancock Tower, one of the big skyscrapers in Chicago. That's a great opportunity to get to know people, to kind of unwind after the conference and get to see some popular sites in Chicago. We have our welcome reception. That's our big kickoff event where there'll be food and drink and people will get to meet and mingle with your fellow humanists. You know, there's also opportunities during our banquets. You know, our banquets are open seating, so you can sit wherever you want, get to know people, talk quite a bit about what's been going on during the conference. You know, and there's also just other opportunities. You know, again, our board and our staff will be on site throughout the conference. So, you know, if you're shy, you want to meet people, you know, certainly come up to one of us. We'd be happy to talk to you and also introduce you to people that we know at the conference, that we know have been at the conference for many years. And they're always so very welcoming and happy to talk to new people. Also, one of the things that we put on our name badges is the city state. I know a lot of people like to connect based on that. If you find somebody who lives in your area, they might be somebody who is the leader or a member of the local humanist group there. And so if you're not a member of your local humanist group, I encourage you to do that so that you can get to know people. So there's lots of opportunities, not only to, again, ask questions and talk directly to our awardees and our speakers, but also get to know humanists. I mean, we're all here at the conference. One of the big reasons why we put on a conference is because in so many parts of the country, people still feel alone in their beliefs. You know, they're new to humanism or they're new to atheism, and they go, gosh, you know, are there other people like me? The conference is a great opportunity to showcase that, to say, yes, there are hundreds of people, there are thousands of people who think just like you. And these are people who are engaged. These are people who want to get involved in humanism and these progressive issues and solve the problems of the country. So it's a great opportunity for people to meet like-minded folks and get to know other people. And I think a lot of times our people come to the conference, they feel energized, they feel ready to be activists, they join local groups, they become a humanist celebrant, they get involved at the national level, they get involved in other secular organizations. These are all great things. I feel like we get a lot of great energy that comes out of the conference. And so if you're somebody who has been on the fence, not sure if you wanted to get involved, come to our conference, learn more about us, and I guarantee that you'll want to get more involved in humanism.
You will make friends who you only see at conferences, and that's not nearly enough, but it will keep you going to conferences just to see these same great, energized, interested people time after time.
I completely agree. I always love going to conferences. It's you know, I'm working there, you know, I'm kind of, you know, putting things together, putting out fires and all kinds of things like that. But I always enjoy it. Just the smiles on people's faces, you know, people who come up to me and say, I'm new to humanism, I thought I was alone, I'm going to get more involved. It really makes the work all completely worth it.
Were there reasons, aside from it being obviously a big anniversary, that you specifically wanted to go back to Chicago this year?
Well, that's really the biggest reason. We really wanted to honor the founding of the organization. Actually, we were founded at the University of Chicago. It was a number of, you know, Unitarian Universalists, secular Jews, ethical culture leaders, a lot of these progressive religious people. And you know, they got together and they thought, well, we don't really believe in supernaturalism. We don't really believe in a higher power that intervenes in our lives. What is this? You know, what do we call this? And that's really how humanism was born in the United States. And so we wanted to honor that. And certainly we haven't been to Chicago. I think the last time we were in Chicago was our 50th anniversary. So, you know, I think that this is just going to be the place where we honor our big anniversary events. Hopefully we'll be here for the 100th anniversary, and I think we'll be in Chicago then. But I think Chicago is also a great location. It's relatively easy to get to. I think we have a pretty good hotel room rate for Chicago at 129. And certainly there's opportunities to room and find roommates and people you might want to connect with. And there might be other affordable options to stay in Chicago too. So I think it's an opportunity for a lot of people to be able to participate. And I think they'll enjoy Chicago as well. I think when we're going in May, it's going to be good weather there too.
Chicago itself, just being a good sized city, is still a little pricey. Is AHA doing anything to help people who might need a roommate find each other, that sort of thing?
Absolutely. We have a lot of information on our website, again, conference.americanhumanist.org. If you want to find a roommate, I'm happy to connect you. I've already connected a few people with roommates. We are at a location where there are a few restaurants within walking distance to the hotel. You know, I know hotel prices are so incredibly expensive, and I completely understand that. So, you know, if you're somebody who, you know, certainly doesn't want to pay $25 for an omelet, and I don't blame you for that, I'm also not somebody who'd want to do that. There are places of which you can walk. We're also about two blocks from the L line. So you can also travel, you know, a few subway stops away if you'd like to do that. And there's opportunities to do that. And, you know, and there's certainly a lot of different types of registration types on our website to register. We have day passes now available. So if you're somebody who can only really come for Saturday and Sunday, there's options for that. There's options where, you know, if you don't want to pay for the banquet meal, which again, I know can be pretty expensive for conferences, there's opportunities to do that so you can still listen to the speaker and be able to participate. So, you know, and certainly, you know, contact us. You know, if you're somebody who's like, you know, look, I really want to come to this conference. I want to be involved, but you know, I can't. I really need some help in sort of making this a little cheaper for me. You know, send us an email. Don't just go, okay, I'm just going to completely rule that out. I really encourage you to contact us. You know, we can really do what we can, because I certainly don't want, you know, money to be a factor in people not getting involved in humanism, because you can get involved in humanism. And if coming to the conference would really help with that, I want to really be able to help people to do that. So just, you know, send us an email and let us know if you're interested. But again, I think the conference is going to be great. It's going to be a unique opportunity. We're celebrating our big anniversary. I really don't want people to miss it. So definitely contact us if you're interested.
Speaking of the location, if the conference itself gets a little overwhelming, which it can do at several hundred people, you are also near several attractions on the lakeshore that people could take a moment and get away quietly to, correct?
That's right. We're very close to the Field Museum. I think there's a planetarium also there. I think it's maybe just a 20-minute walk or so, and a very short cab ride if people need to do that. So yeah, absolutely. We encourage that. I mean, quite often some folks are, you know, they've got the sessions that they wanted to attend, and then they go, okay, you know, I'm going to enjoy Chicago, or I'm going to enjoy the city for a little while. That's great. We really encourage that. Come back and, you know, bring me back a hot dog or something. I'd really appreciate that.
So what is AHA, just to look forward, not that we want to get ahead of ourselves or anything, but just to look forward a little bit, what is AHA thinking for next year?
Well, next year for our conference, we're going to be in Charleston, South Carolina. And I think that's going to be a very interesting city to be holding our conference. It's very rare that we hold our annual conferences in the kind of Bible Belt area. And I feel like, you know, the holy city, you know, they call Charleston, is going to be a unique opportunity for us to be talking about a lot of the issues related to atheism and humanism. So we're pretty excited about that, although that's, you know, about over a year away now. But we always are thinking about that because, you know, we get a lot of requests for speakers for our conference. I think, you know, we have about, oh, I think it was 34 speakers on our lineup this year for Chicago, 19 women, 16 men, which is great. We always try to achieve gender diversity and balance at our conferences. And so we had to, unfortunately, say no to a lot of speakers this year in Chicago, you know, it being our big 75th. We probably had more speaker requests than we've ever had. But that means that we are probably looking at them for Charleston next year. And certainly there are going to be a lot of people who want to speak in Charleston as well. So if you're somebody who, you know, you come to the conference and you see our speakers and you're somebody who is interested in speaking on a topic that you think is important to humanists, contact us. Send us an email and let us know what you're interested in speaking on, and we'll definitely consider you for future conferences. But I think being in Charleston will be really interesting. And again, I think we'll be looking at the issues that present itself in 2016 and early 2017. And we'll think about the type of topics that we want to address when 2017 rolls around. So I'm looking forward to that.
All right. We are out of time. But if you want to, please, one last time, just tell people where they can get more information about the conference and where they can register.
Our 75th anniversary conference is going to be held in Chicago, May 26th to the 29th. Learn more, conference.americanhumanist.org, or follow us on Facebook to get updates. I really hope to see you all there in Chicago.
Thank you so much, Maggie.
Thank you so much, Stephanie.
As always, we value your feedback on the show. Have a comment or question for today's guests? Have a suggestion for a guest you'd like us to interview? Email us at humanisthour@americanhumanist.org or call our listener feedback line at 202-618-1371. Thank you again for listening to The Humanist Hour, the official broadcast of the American Humanist Association.